And how did you first become associated with the film Resurrection?
Well, as I say, the director from, the picture editor, Gord McClellan, I had worked with on Fast Track, and he, for one reason or another, just thinks I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know, I mean, I love Gord, and he's just a wonderful guy. He originally, he actually has won an Academy Award for a documentary he edited not long, a while ago, and he's done everything from, you know, The Relic Hunter to Road to Avonlea to right now, he was working on a Warner Brothers series called Witchblade. So in any case, he loves music, and he just told Russell, the director, that he had the guy for him. And it wasn't even because I was Canadian. It wasn't a Canadian film. It was more just right place at the right time, you know.
So how involved do others, such as the director, get involved in your project?
It varies a great deal. For example, Russell on Resurrection, because he spent most of his time in Los Angeles and Montreal, he was also directing episodes of The Hunger at that time. I didn't have a great deal of contact with him. I would send down half-inch videotapes with my music striped onto them with the picture, and we would talk on the phone, and most of the time, you know, he said, that's great, except for the theme. I must have written the theme like 10 times, you know. He just kept on going, it needs to be, you know, he's haunted by the death of his four-year-old son. Just the way he said it, you know, he had this vision that he wanted, and you know, God love him, he was right, you know, that the one I came up with finally was indeed the right one.
So when composing a score like Resurrection, what kind of a timeline are you given?
Well, the industry standard for scoring a picture is 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, they say. And with Resurrection, because, to tell you the truth, there was a great deal of controversy over the cut. It was very violent, and, you know, the producers wanted it one way, and Russell wanted it another way, and, you know, it was things that, you know, are certainly beyond my control. The final cut was delayed for such a long time. It actually, I had, you know, a good, you know, six or eight weeks to work on it. I had a very comfortable amount of time. It's just that, you know, it was very, you know, I had to avoid certain scenes because they were still in a state of flux right up until the bitter end. As a matter of fact, even after I had scored it with a 50-piece orchestra, I had to go back in and you know, re-edit it because they changed the picture.
Okay. So now, as a composer, you deal with many different styles of music.
Yeah.
How do you deal with sort of sorting out the styles, and then how do you finally choose a style to compose in?
Well, most people living in Canada, you have learned to be a real jack of all trades. In that, you know, if you live in the States, you can focus on, you know, feature film composition, episodic television, strictly album work, you know, arranging for singers, what have you. But in Canada, because each individual industry is so small, you end up having to do a little bit of everything. And in Toronto, you know, a lot of people work in the advertising industry, for example, or, you know, doing music for advertising, and so I've had quite a bit of experience in that, and you have to learn how to write pretty much every style. And rather than that being a liability, in other words, well, what is your original voice or whatever, I love it, you know. And so as far as narrowing down what the style or the approach is going to be, sometimes that's provided by the temp score, sometimes it's just your own intuition. You think, you know, what would be good for this is a, you know, combination of hip-hop and Celtic music, or John Adams style American minimalism with electronic stuff. It's actually, that's half the fun.
So in your opinion, what makes a good score?
Well, it has to be spotted properly, and that is, you know, there's nothing worse than too much music in a film. It drives me nuts. Like, a real, you know, a guy who does that is like Spike Lee. He's got way too much music in his movies. It's just constant. And unfortunately, a lot of, you know, really commercial comedies suffer from that as well, because they seem to think that you got to telegraph to the audience how darn funny this thing is. But I think, number one, it's where you use the music really makes a difference. And then just a strikingly original approach that isn't, you know, copying the latest trend. You know, someone who seems to always be ahead of the wave is someone like Thomas Newman. Although, unfortunately, he seems to be keeping being asked to write the same score he wrote before. I mean, I'm sure it's extremely frustrating for him. Like, his movies are always being tempted by his own previous movies. But something like American Beauty, you know, I mean, that was startlingly original and effective. And then, you know, even things like, you know, I know this is shooting myself in the foot, but films like, you know, Pulp Fiction and the like that don't even use a traditional composed score, I mean, I find those really effective sometimes, you know.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the term spotting. What is spotting?
Oh, spotting is where you sit with the filmmakers, the director and the producer and maybe even the picture editor, and you decide where the music is going to start and stop and what sort of thing you're going to do.
Okay. So how often do you have to make revisions when you're spotting?
Well, no, the spotting is a one-time deal. But the word revisions, though, where the revisions come in is when you present your demos to the filmmakers, and they'll ask either try again or can you just, you know, change this a little or take out that part or that kind of thing.
Okay. Now, because Resurrection was a foreign film, was it French?
No, it was American.
Oh, it was an American film.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then how is that different than from a Canadian production? With a different budget.
Yeah, I was going to say budget, in number one, because I think Resurrection, I mean, the numbers were always getting tossed around, but I think Resurrection was somewhere in the neighborhood of a $9 million movie, which from an American, and I don't even know if that was Canadian or American, obviously there's a difference, but let's say $9 million Canadian. That is a really, really low budget American movie, and a nicely, you know, a nice fat budget for a Canadian film. So right away, that's a big difference. I mean, you know, as I mentioned, I used a 54-piece orchestra and then two other sessions of, you know, gradually smaller orchestras on that film. And, you know, block booked a week at Manta Sound and everything else. That's pretty much unheard of, being able to afford to do that on a Canadian film.
So now, does budget dictate the size of orchestra or the kind of score that you write?
Definitely. Although, not necessarily to a negative extent. I mean, if someone comes to you and they have a very small budget and they're expecting a huge orchestral score, you know, I mean, you can either get someone to do it with synths, which is, you know, rather disappointing, or you can, or you can just say, you know what, it's not going to happen. You're not going to get a big romantic, you know, 100-piece orchestra, a romantic orchestra, meaning like a 100-piece full-out orchestra. You're just not going to get it. So certainly, that comes into play. But, you know, you can come up with a great score. I feel, you know, as long as there's enough of a budget, for you to spend the amount of time you need to spend on it, just, you know, your own fee or whatever. And then secondly, enough to afford a reasonable production values, you know, and real musicians. You want to have some, even if it's a very small number, like two or three soloists, that's really important, I think.
Okay. So how would a score you write today differ from one you wrote, let's say, 10 years ago?
Well, I think we're living in a fantastic time, you know, as composers, because the technology that we have available to us is incredible. I mean, my favorite thing now is that, you know, it's a given that you have to use MIDI, which is, you know, samplers and electronic and synths and all that sort of stuff to write with. But the latest and greatest thing is this business of being able to record live musicians onto your hard drive in the same domain. And so suddenly, you know, you have this incredible control over live performances to picture. I mean, that's the greatest thing.
Okay. So, do you have any favorite film composers, and who are your favorites?
Oh, definitely. As I mentioned before, I love Thomas Newman. And certainly, you talk to any filmmaker, you know, like something like The Shawshank Redemption is a sort of a standard temp score favorite. As a matter of fact, you know, if you listen very carefully, you'll always hear people having to knock that baby off in films. You know, you go, oh, Shawshank. you know, and of course I also loved his, you know, American Beauty. Little Women was stunning. And, you know, The Player. I mean, these are all great scores. I mean, I love Danny Elfman, particularly things like Men in Black, you know, Mission Impossible and those things. I mean, he's unbelievable. James Newton Howard, really like his work a lot because he's great with orchestra and synth. And he comes from a bit of a, you know, pop background, which I share as well. And you know what? You catch him on a good day, you know, Jerry Goldsmith, John Williams, and James Horner, and all those guys, they can still rock, you know.
So what kind of advice would you give to up-and-coming composers?
I think the best thing, you know, from a business point of view, is establish a relationship with filmmakers. The model that I've always seen as, you know, realistic is that, look at, you know, Howard Shore came up with David Cronenberg. Danny Elfman came up with Tim Burton. Michael Dana, who is sort of the most recent, you know, Canadian composer to really hit it big, you know, he made his reputation with Adam McGoyan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Bernard Herrmann and Alfred Hitchcock. I mean, that's, you know, John Williams, even though he was very successful and he had a relationship with Irwin Allen, the guy who made all those disaster films.
Yes.
And then, you know, of course, got hooked up with Steven Spielberg and the like. But that, I think, is something that's very difficult to do. It's like, how do you meet your wife? You know, it's you can't really contrive it. But that is a good thing. And otherwise, you have to love film. You know, you have to go see lots of movies and just study it.
Okay. So what does the future hold for you?
Well, I would love to just sort of do what I'm doing now, to tell you the truth. I mean, I've had some friends that have moved to Los Angeles, and I mean, you know, certainly that's the big time. But, you know, I love Toronto. I have a family here, and, you know, I really like raising my kids here. And, you know, just the variety of work is fantastic, you know. So I just like to do more of same with, you know, bigger and better, if that's at all possible.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Jim. I appreciate your time today.
Okay. My pleasure.